Hey beautiful people, and welcome to a brand new episode of A Slice of Life with me, Jack Walton. Be sure to subscribe on both iTunes and Spotify, and follow me on social media, I am Jack Walton, to keep updated with new monthly episodes. Hey everyone, welcome back to a brand new episode of A Slice of Life. It's now the final episode for season two. Bloody hell, where has the time gone? It's absolutely crazy. I started this season back in December. And half of the season was recorded in the studio, and the other half has been recorded at home due to the ongoing lockdown situation. So thank you so much for bearing with me with all the technology and just, you know, learning how to record on different platforms. It's been an interesting journey, but it's been really good because it means now that I actually do enjoy recording remotely when I need to, and there's so many benefits to doing that. So yeah, it's been great. But this is the final episode of season two, and we've got a really, really exciting one for today. So this month's guest, I actually met on Instagram. I think it was a while ago. I feel like it was maybe a year ago. I think we started following each other and liking each other's content and stuff. And we both post about, you know, spirituality and mental health and mindfulness and simple, similar topics. So yes, without waffling on too much, let me introduce this month's guest, Hannah Wallace.
Hey, Jack. So great to be here.
Thank you so much for joining me, love. How are you?
I'm good, thank you. And I'm really glad, obviously, that you've found these new ways to record, because I find it amazing that we can do all this remotely, wherever we are in the world as well. It's amazing, isn't it?
It's actually really it's like a whole new world, because you can be recording with anybody anywhere. And I mean, it's so easy, isn't it?
It's amazing. It never ceases to make me feel it or that we're able to do this.
Absolutely love it. So why don't we start with it's my favorite question, really. Like, Hannah, who are you? So who are you? An introduction to you. And yeah, we'll let it flow from there, really.
So I am a speaker, mentor, podcaster, and I'm somebody that my journey's been one of, like, I guess, like, it's all one that's presented its challenges. When I was 17, my life basically changed overnight by becoming unwell, very unwell, to the point where I was bedbound for quite a few months. It was a very dark time, and no one really knew what was wrong with me. I knew that I'd had glandular fever,
right?
But my body just wasn't recovering, and I didn't understand why. So at the same time, I'd always been quite spiritually awake. So this was 20 years ago. So I began to open up to more spiritual stuff, because I had all this time. I was on my own. I was watching all my friends go off and do their lives, I was just trapped, basically. So I opened myself up to alternative therapies, and it took me on this journey. And it actually took 10 years to find out that I had this genetic condition that was down my mother. I know. So it took 10 years to find that out. So
wow.
Very long journey, and within that time I didn't wait 10 years to reach the space of acceptance. Luckily, I took my power back about 3 years in, after a very few dark years of, like, depression, which is understandable.
If you definitely,
if you go from having a totally very full, vibrant life to overnight your life changing like that, it's traumatic at any age.
Yeah.
But when you're 17, that's you're just beginning, really.
Yeah, exactly.
Or your passions, everything you think you're going to do, it was taken, essentially. So I really had to redefine that. So I made a pact with myself when I was about 20, 21, okay, if I can fix my body despite all my efforts that I was trying, the one thing I can take my power back with is with my mind.
Yes.
And I took myself on that path. So by the time I did finally actually find out what was wrong, I was able to process it in a way that I wasn't totally messed up by that point. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't say, you know, it's been an interesting ride.
Yes.
An interesting ride. And, you know, the unfortunate thing is with this, it has left me having to use a wheelchair, but we have to make the best of what life brings us. And the one thing that I try and do within my platform and within what I'm sharing with the world is that whatever is happening to us, I believe we can find a way, we can find grace, and, you know, we can learn to make the best of what's happening to us and show
that
we're all different. And those differences are our superpowers, and it's our perception is everything, and how we look at it.
Yes. Wow. Oh my God, Hannah, that is real talk, isn't it? I mean, that is so, That's so inspiring. Honestly, that is so inspirational. I mean, like, how it's a big question, but I'm sure a lot of people will be wondering the same thing. Obviously, you were diagnosed and you were, you know, you had this disability growing up. How did you stay so like positive, and how do you right now, how do you stay so positive and such kind of so upbeat in this good mindset? Because I guess it doesn't really come overnight, this kind of thinking, does it?
Oh, absolutely not. And I think for starting, the fact that there was a level of spiritual openness all those years ago,
right,
definitely gave me that foundation that I had something else that I was able to look to that felt bigger than me. And I would say that definitely helped. And I think it was opening myself up. I mean, the way I look at it is this: I think whenever we go through anything traumatic, I definitely think that I use therapy.
Yes. Sure.
Like, I think that when you go through anything that's life changing or, you know, that's going to change your life forever, so to speak. So I use those, but I think using those other modalities and making that commitment to yourself as well, like what you said about how do I stay positive? I think it's those daily practices, those daily choices.
Yes.
We have a choice, don't we? And the way I looked at it, well, it's as rubbish to feel as miserable in this situation. What can I do? How can I look at this differently? How can I choose, you know, how can I choose like a different way here? And that was what kind of then led me when I was on that initial path of, okay, I need to do something here, because it felt very dark in those first few years, because I think I was angry, understandably. And I had to go through that grief process. I think I'm really grateful to a doctor who was very open-minded at the time and very kind. And she said, basically, it's almost been like a death of yourself, and you need to go through that grief process of understanding you're probably never going to be the same again. And I'll openly admit to people, I fought against that. I didn't want that to be a reality. And I think I had to come to terms with that first myself. And that was the real turning point. And I think for anybody listening who maybe is going through something, you can do all the stuff, all the processes. It's when you come to that point yourself of, okay, it doesn't mean you give up. When you come, acceptance, I think we're scared of acceptance because we think it means giving up, right?
That's a good point, yeah.
Yeah, and I think there's this fear that we think if we somehow accept something, then we're not going to do anything about it. That's a perception, I believe. Absolutely. With that acceptance, if we can use that acceptance in a positive way, okay, I'm here right now. What can I do to help myself? What do I have control of and what don't I? And stop trying to control the things you don't have control of, because if you know you can't control them, there's no point anyway. But what can I do? And the more we begin to focus on what can we do and build them up, not in a kind of heavy way, just pressure ourselves. Because I think there have definitely been a time in my early 20s where once I got on that path, I was push, trying to do everything. And I really had to come to a point of almost meeting myself in the middle. And I would say that was my journey to finding grace, where I had to meet myself in that middle place and be like, okay, I need to have that cosmic dance of slowing down, but also doing at the same time. So I really, I believe it's like weaving between those two spaces. And, you know, when we can learn to live our life in that way, it really does change everything.
I mean, this is absolute living proof that does. You have clearly been on a huge, huge journey. You really have got that. You've got that mindset that I think a lot of people, especially in your position, would really like to have. I mean, it's a unique thing, because you really do have to go there. And like you say, you have to go through what you went through to get to this point. Now you have to grieve. You have to kind of feel the feelings that we really don't want to feel, you know, like the depression and just those feelings that we will do anything in our power to avoid, but you felt them to get to this place, into finding grace, I guess, which is just, I think that line, finding grace, it's lovely, isn't it? And that's what you're all about. While I mention that briefly, tell us about finding grace and what you do with that, because that is a big passion of yours, isn't it?
It is. So I have a podcast called Finding Grace. I'm actually also writing a book.
Oh my gosh, that is so exciting. I can just imagine it. Finding Grace as the book. That is, oh, what an amazing like title. Wow.
Yeah, and it's all about how we integrate our darkness and light. So it's using my journey and using what I've learned on this journey and how I've learned to integrate that. And I think it's worth saying to everybody that I believe that we are constantly learning and unlearning on this journey. When we get to a certain place, we learn so much, and then we need to have that space where we step back and let that integrate. Because I think we live in a world where it's hustle, 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 push, 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 and there's a lot of pressure on people. And I think it's so important to have those times where we have that pause and we recognize that as humans, it's not running in a linear straight line. It's more of a cyclic thing. And when we learn to move with those cycles, we can really take our power back, whatever is happening with our life. Because I think when you're in the place of depression, we become obsessed. And I know this from personal experience, whether it's healing, depression, whatever we're trying to do, we become obsessed with the outcome. And we stop learning to grow and trust the kind of blips in the road and the process, because, you know, those blips are as important feedback as with the moving forward. Those blips are often the times where we have those pause, the little mini resets along the way. So what I'm sharing within that, what I'm writing, is about learning to work with that rather than working against it.
Oh, like you say, it's working with it. And again, I guess that's a process. But can I just say, I cannot wait until the book's out. I'll be buying it ASAP. That is so exciting. Obviously, we haven't met in person yet, have we? But once lockdown's over, we need to meet up, don't we? We need to make that happen.
Oh, my family apparently lived up with that. My family obviously live really close to you. So we just discovered that today as we were talking.
So we'll make it happen, Hannah, for absolute certain. That'll be amazing. Oh my gosh. So you were saying quite a lot about, although you became ill when you were 17, before that you were quite spiritual, weren't you? Which I found that really interesting. So tell us about your spiritual journey. How did that develop? Where was like the shift in the awakening? Because spirituality doesn't just kind of pop up overnight, does it? It's a gradual thing, I guess. What's your kind of journey and experience with spirituality?
Well, I mean, it's so funny. And I was always known amongst my school friends as the slightly weird one, because I'd say from about the age of 12, I decided I wanted to be a yogi. I don't even know where this came from. It was almost like something that was in me. And so I'd found, I think, a meditation book. My dad had a lot of books on a bookshelf. And my parents aren't really even into this. So I began the journey when I was about 12. And I was always the one in school offering herbs, massages. This is how wild it was. The fact that when people would have their periods, I was doing acupressure points on their back to Chinese.
Oh, my God.
this is how kind of out there it was. So, and my sister then started working in Waterstones, and I used to obviously be the, I was known, you know, her colleagues used to know me as the weird sister that used to, Charlotte used to buy me the books in the morning. I've asked my mum this before. I said, I wonder where it came from. And she said to me, I don't know. And maybe it was something that, so it was a gradual process. And it was very interesting for me, because at the same time as me being into that, there was also a side to me that was incredibly regular, like every other teenage girl.
Yeah.
Going out, clubbing, drinking. I'm grateful that I had that. And one thing that I believe is so important when we're on this journey, I don't believe we should put ourselves in a box. We have to break out of those boxes. Like, I believe spirituality isn't limiting yourself to what you think a spiritual person should be. Your own journey and your own process. And yes, we can take inspiration from other people and be inspired by what others are doing.
Yeah.
But it's so important when we open up to this journey to not feel we have to fit into the box of being a spiritual person. What feels good to you? And I say this to everybody, and I say this to friends if they're struggling, put your hand on your heart. What is your heart telling you you want right now? And what is it trying to say to you? Because I think, you know, whenever we, whatever path we're on, you know, whether it's spiritual, whether we're wanting to open a business, whether we're trying to emulate what our friends are doing, it's coming back to ourselves. And I truly believe the spiritual journey is the remembering and coming back home to ourselves. And when we strip back all the layers and strip back all the what we should be and shouldn't be and all of those things, what's beneath that? And that for me is at the core essence of this journey, and not feeling you have to fit into those boxes, yes, so to speak. And I always believed that, and that's why I always felt, you know, I was always glad that I had, you know, I've got friends who are in my life who are very spiritual, but I've also got some of my best friends who I've grown up with are still my best friends now. And we, you know, I love them. They're my anchors. They keep me grounded, and yeah, we love each other for who we are, not just, you know, they're accepting of me and I'm accepting of them. And I think we need that diversity.
It's interesting. I'm actually, God, it's weird because in so many ways, everything you just said, I really relate to it. So I've got, you know, spiritual friends, but I really love the fact that a lot of my friends aren't. And I think, like you say, it's kind of nice to have that mix, isn't it? I love that I've got spiritual friends to speak to about, you know, the stuff that actually my friends probably wouldn't get. But then on the other hand, I also like having friends who are just kind of like, yeah, they're just, you know, they're not spiritual. I kind of love that because it's nice to have that mix, isn't it? It's nice to have that diversity. And I guess every single person brings something different, whether you're spiritual, not spiritual, religious, not religious. I just think having that, like you said, that variety is the spice of life, isn't it? So having a real mix of everybody. And also what you said about the boxes, because then again, it is a good point with being spiritual. It's not all about, like, oh, you know, you can't dance in a club, you can't do this, you can't do that. It's that we can be dancing in a club one night, and the next night we can be having our crystals and meditating, can't we?
And I think that's really, really important to define your journey as what's going to work for you. And I mean, look, I understand. I think some people, what happens, they awaken on these journeys and they feel so disconnected from the people around them.
Right.
And I think that people often end up, you know, moving away from the people in their life. I guess it depends that you're obviously very lucky like me that having got those people in our lives that love us for who we are. And I think that's, you know, I'm really grateful for that. And I'm grateful you've got that as well, because I do think it keeps us grounded as well.
Yeah, I agree. It does. It
keeps us in that space of reality, of also understanding that I believe that spiritual wisdom doesn't just come from the quote-unquote the spiritual people or the spiritual places. It's woven within everyone, and it's woven our experiences and our places. And you know, some of the wisdom that I've received from friends over the years, when I went through a really tough breakup a couple of years ago, some of those girls, they came out with gold, and it helped me through that period of time. And, you know, and I believe angels work through people in so many different ways. It's about us opening up. It's remembering that when we ask for help from the universe or God or whatever you believe in, that help will come to us through people, through things, through books. Just the like delivery of the, you know, the spiritual experience where we see spirit. I think it's remembering that, you know, source, spirit, God will talk to us in all the mediums that we're able.
That's a good point. That's really interesting. That's just made me think of something that, do you know, when a lot of the time we sometimes do expect the message or the guidance to be in a really big, majestical, spiritual sense, but actually it might just be your parent or a friend giving a really simple bit of advice. And then actually, that's what you asked for, but you're just getting it in a slightly different way. You're just having it delivered through that medium. That is interesting, because I think a lot of the time we do think it's going to be something really huge and transforming, when actually it's just normally somebody we know giving us some really nice advice that we just needed in exactly that right time and that right place. That for me is that's interesting, because then I guess in a deeper sense, like you say, it proves that everybody is spiritual in that way, even if they don't practice it or they don't really believe in it, they do have that within them. So me and you then, I guess that just means that we're just kind of awake to it and we get it and we understand it. So really, I guess we're all just the same, but some people either choose to kind of explore it more, or some people just kind of get interested in it. That's quite interesting, actually. Maybe we all are quite spiritual.
Yeah, ooh. I do think that as well. And I think, you know, it does sometimes, I'm in awe when I look back over the years and reflect, and I think, gosh, I'm really glad I listened in those moments when I'd asked for help and when it got delivered to me. I mean, sometimes I have had one or two experiences where I've been like, oh my God, this is like, oh, you know, I've really, you know, You know, for instance, I went to India on this. It was amazing. And it was like, and it was a manner. It's kind of, I'd seen the Taj Mahal in a book when I was five.
Oh,
was,
God. Wow.
I'm going to go there. And, you know, I remember my mum, we were at the kind of gate at the bottom where the Taj Mahal was. This was maybe 5 years ago now, maybe 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, my mum said to me, oh, I hope this is everything you wanted. And, you know, when I got there, my mum had gone into the Taj Mahal itself. So it was just too inaccessible. So I was like, do you know what? I'm all right. You can tell me what it's like. So I was getting pushed around the outside by the guide, and I had this moment of everything. It was like one of those moments where it's like my heart just opened and I saw everything flash before me. And it was like a mass integration. And yeah, it was a really mammoth experience.
That gives me goosebumps.
Crying. And the worst of it was the guy who was pushing me, I didn't want him to know I was crying because I knew that he'd done something wrong. So then my mum comes back and is like, darling, why have you got your sunglasses on? It's dusk. And I was like, I'm having a spiritual experience, mum. And she was like, oh, keep them on, darling. We don't want Gamit to think he's upset you. And I was like, that's why I have.
Oh, I love that. You're like, no, just let me keep them on.
Yeah, but you know, and so we do get those deliveries sometimes, but then there have been other times, like you said, it's a very simple delivery from a friend, or when we've asked for help, it comes in the form of maybe a book or
and
I think it's understanding, and it's being observing and grateful to it all, and to show the gratitude to those little things as much as the kind of bigger things as well. And I sometimes think those bigger things, they won't happen very often anyway. They're just they happen, I think, just to give us those impacts. And then you'll often find after quite a big download or something has happened that you'll have quite a quiet time of it. Disconnected, it's not because you're not doing stuff. It's because simply our bodies have to integrate those, take the time to integrate. And we also have to, you know, this is to bring us back into our bodies. We are within this human body. We are having this human experience. And I think very often when we're on these spiritual journeys, we end up getting so caught up there. We have to come back into our bodies, into our hearts, and re-root ourselves into the earth. And remember, we are part of this earth.
Oh, that is so interesting. When you said that about like spiritual downloads, that's a good point. So you have one, and then it's almost like for a while nothing really happens. It's just kind of like quiet. I've felt that a lot, and but then unexpectedly, maybe 6-7 months later, you'll have another one, and then again you're processing it, aren't you? You're kind of just moving through it. Which, and I think when you said about the big spiritual moments like the one you had in India, it's like they do almost happen to, for me, I think it's to almost inspire you to say, look, you know, we're still here, we're supporting you, it's happening, it's real. So now this has happened, it spurs you on then to just kind of, you know, go for it and do whatever you're working on. I mean, if it's a business or a relationship, or if you just kind of, and I think that's the point. I think also we have them when we, in a deep sense, need them. So when we really need to see something, I mean, do you believe that I'm a really big one for angel numbers? Like, I love angel numbers.
Absolutely. I am a
That's
big
my one. Biggest one. Yeah. I mean, whenever, I always say, whenever I see, obviously the biggest one for me is 11-11. Whenever I see 11-11, it isn't very often, but when I do see it, I'm like, oh my God, how did you know? I really, really needed to see that today. Mm-hmm. I desperately needed to see that. And it only ever happens then. It's when I really need to see it. And I'm like, oh my God, it does work, doesn't it? It's almost like that for me is when I get goosebumps. It's a bit scary. It's like, whoa, this works.
Oh no, it's amazing. And I think as well, actually recently, Carl Gray's just brought out.
Oh God, I love him.
That I love Kyle. He's such a babe. He's brought out this book, Angel Numbers, and it's such a good book.
I need to get that.
Yeah, no, it's really good. And it's, I feel it's like simple guidance. You can just shut your eyes, open the book on a page, and where your finger or something falls, that's the number you need to see, and it will never fail you. And I think it's the same with any of, you're using oracle cards and you're using anything like that, when we're having those practices, to not overthink with them, that when something comes up, and don't get me wrong, we've all pulled the oracle card. I've got a friend and she says to me, I don't like that oracle. you pull me another one. And I'm like,
and that's what I mean, though. That's why it's hard, isn't it? Because it's almost like, you know, that actually we can't do that. We need to see it, right?
And also, I think as well, the one thing that we often get worried about on this spiritual journey is negative thinking or feeling those kind of darker feelings. We need to feel them. We need to integrate our shadows. There is nothing wrong with negative thoughts. Our negative thoughts are feedback and sometimes something we need to see. And I think we need to stop worrying if we're having a negative thought, we're going to attract something bad. And
oh, you're right, Hannah. Yeah, 100%.
It can be quite, I think, when people get on this journey, especially if they're using a lot of law of attraction stuff, they can worry if they're going to do something wrong, it's going to bring something bad. It's recognizing we need to understand our dominant vibration and, you know, as long as we're consistently nourishing and looking after ourselves, and even if we're not, all of that is feedback that there's something that needs to pivot or shift in our lives. And, you know, we can, I think, yes, we need to have our thoughts in a positive direction, but if something is coming up or we're feeling a negative feeling, what's that trying to tell me? And actually, like, we need to make friends with all of the aspects of ourselves. And that's how we become a multidimensional being and integrate all of that inside of us. Our shadows are as beautiful as the light.
Oh my gosh, that is so true. I mean, it's interesting when you say negative thinking, because I think I've realized a lot of us at times, it's like we are afraid to feel. Does that make sense? I mean, we did a live video, didn't we, a few weeks ago, and a lot of that we were saying that a lot of people are afraid to feel because we worry that if we feel it and we really go there, it's going to create more of it. But it's actually the opposite. It's almost like by doing that, you're working on it, and then it's going to actually create the shift, and it's going to create the it's going to create it moving on, and it's actually going to be a really good thing for you. Because I've realized that if I ignore that, like negative thoughts or kind of stuff I need to work on, I know that actually that will just keep coming back up time and time again, even if it's in like a month from now, 2 months, I know it will come up again. So I may as well work on it now, because otherwise it will just be a repeat performance. And that's easier said than done, I think, because like I say, it's, we don't want to feel that stuff. We don't want to go there. But if you've been on your journey a while, you kind of get that actually there's no easy way out, is there? There's no easy way around it. I mean, that's another thing. I think people think that spiritual people, I said this to my other friend who's very spiritual, that, oh, they must, you know, it's all woo-woo and like light and like love and happiness and crystals and meditation, which that is just one side of it. You've got the human side where you feel and you cry and deal with emotions, and there's negativity and there's anxiety. It's like spiritual people are not immune from any of that stuff. It's just that we're choosing, basically for me and you, we're just choosing a different way to think and to work on it. And we see things differently, I guess. So yeah, it's like we're all the same, aren't we? There's no spiritual immunity or like card. There's no pass. There is no pass.
The only way, as I say to people, the only way is through, and we have to go through. And I guess as well, what you said about spiritual people, we're essentially choosing to you know, choose love, return back to love. It doesn't mean that on that path, we're not going to have those feelings, those thoughts. And also, I just want to share that sometimes when you've done the inner work, you can go through a couple of years and then stuff that's really old stuff can come back up again. That's nothing to worry about. Sometimes when stuff comes up, healing is like a spiral. And we're spiraling round on this healing process. And when it often comes up again, we will have a different level of awareness to it. And it's just another layer that we're ready to see with that healing and maybe have a deeper understanding to why or what's going on with what happened. So sometimes I know some people have said to me, I'm not really sure what's happened, that, you know, this thing's come up again, and I do the work around it. But it's about, firstly, you know, dropping the judgment. It's not that you did anything wrong. It's the fact that it's being shown to you now on a deeper level to go even deeper into that healing. It's like, the journey never stops. There's no, what you said about no path. There's no getting on. There's no like drop out at some point. Oh, you've done it all now. Well done. You know, sit back and relax now. Have a beer and sit back and relax.
Oh my God, that is so true.
Yeah. So it's constantly remembering that, you know, we are human, like you say, and that's what's beautiful as well. And that, you know, our tears can be as healing as the happiest and wonderful
Ooh,
feeling.
Yeah. I totally agree. I think it's almost like it's getting comfortable with that. It's trying to be comfortable with those emotions, because I think when you do, and again, I love using the word surrender, when you surrender to them and to anything really, I mean, it's so much easier, because we can fight it all we want and try not to feel it, but it's really not going to work. I mean, surrendering is the key. And when you mentioned about healing, I see it the same. It's almost like healing within that. There are so many small little layers built up and built up and built up that, although, like you say, you might think you've healed one aspect, then out of the blue it comes up again, but you then realize it's not the same as last time. It might look like the same, but it's a different layer of that subject. And I've had the same thing happen recently, and it's really interesting, because you then, when you have those awakenings and those moments and those downloads, you then realize, oh, actually it's just like a deeper kind of thing within that big subject, that topic, whatever it is for you. And it's almost like you can't know that from day one. You can't be told all that from day one, because how could you process it all? I mean, it would be like an overload. You couldn't process all of that stuff together. So it's like we need it in stages, because number one, for our mental health and our well-being, and number two, because we need to do that work in between where we are kind of healing and doing the inner stuff. We can't just have it all from day one, because it would be, I mean, you'd be like, what the hell do we do with this information now?
Well, no, you're right. And you're really spot on about that. And I think that's the thing, isn't it? And I guess that's the stripping back process of this, the kind of the undressing of this whole experience, that sometimes it can initially seem quite amazing and shiny. And then you get to these lips or these bumps, like, oh my God, well, what is this? But that's allowing us to strip another layer off our egos as well, because, you know, the ego can be really sneaky with things. And I think it's about working with that as well. Like we almost, if we got too comfortable with it, we'd never allow ourselves to go that bit deeper.
Yeah. Because it's almost like, I guess we'd become complacent, wouldn't we? Which then would just kind of, that would really affect it, because then growth wouldn't be able to happen. So if you do become complacent, it's like, oh, we've got it all figured out now. We know everything. It's like, I'm done. I've graduated from whatever. No, it's the total opposite of that, isn't it? It's just, it never really ends. It's just ongoing. And it's the same if you're not spiritual. I mean, we're always learning, aren't we? Even if it's just about our emotions and our, you know, ourselves, our minds, it's whatever kind of person you are. We're never done learning, are we?
Oh, no, we're not. And I think, you know, I think that's where the joy is at. And I think I wish this was taught to us when we were younger.
Oh, yes.
It kind of hits us, doesn't it? We often get hit by this, like maybe late teens or early 20s. And it's like, no one ever taught us how to navigate this. There was no kind of rule book, but that's because our parents are learning. And I think as well, one of the greatest things when we go on this journey is the unlearning the programming from growing up as well. And
oh yeah, big one.
Stripping back those layers to that as well, and the society programming too, because we've got so many layers to it that, you know, if we're different or we feel different, or, you know, depending on, you know, whatever is going on for us, you know, there's often things within society that makes us, you know, feel a deep sense of pain because of that difference. And it's about,
I agree,
that, you know, meeting that where we are as well.
That's interesting, because for me, like growing up being different with my sexuality, I, you know, that used to be a huge like negative thing for me. And I mean, being spiritual now, I've realized that, like, even sexuality, it's like, what does that actually mean? It's almost just like a label. So that's why when I do everything that I do, I try not to like put a huge emphasis on my sexuality, because to me, that's just a really, really tiny part. It's like, I'm attracted to men in a sexual sense, but actually I feel like a lot of people are attracted to different sexes, and a lot of people just don't even acknowledge that, because again, it just goes back to what we were taught growing up. Well, for me in school, which was, I've left school about 7 years now, I feel like things are getting better. I see like people coming out in schools now, and I think that's really nice. But when I was in school, there was, you know, no talks on it. We had sex education classes, and it was literally just heterosexual only. So there was nothing about different genders and stuff. It was literally just, you know, man and a woman. So, you know, you are from an early age ingrained, oh, this is different. And sadly, when you're that age, you know, being different now, we love it, don't we? It's like, oh, they're different. It's a great thing. We try to celebrate it. But then it's like, no, if you stick out, you stick out, and it's not a good thing, and you do everything you can to not stick out. That's why I think that actually those kinds of things, although to begin with they might seem like really, like you said, big differences that do cause pain, and they do cause pain for a while, definitely a lot of like disability and sexuality and
Definitely. And I still get stupid things said to me. I still have to like sit back and deep breath. But, you know, it's just, you know, we're always going to experience that. And, you know, I have somebody in my life who never really came to terms with his sexuality. And, you know, when we were in school, people started to come out. But yeah, it's a very difficult thing, isn't it? Because, you know, it's the programming that people have got, whereas actually what you touched on about how that a lot of people don't want to talk about their desires or
definitely
what they're really feeling. I believe that. And, you know, I believe a lot more people are a lot more fluid than they would like to say. But
trust me.
Yeah, I agree. And I've always been the very open one with this. And I think it's interesting that no matter how much we evolve,
we're still scared.
There's still barriers around this. And again, it's the same with the disability thing, because people still struggle sometimes to approach it with you, or perfectly normal people can say weird things to you or not really know what to say to you. Just because I guess it's so different to what they've experienced or what they've been programmed to. My nephew, for instance, my sister, when she was younger, he'd obviously always grown up seeing Auntie Hannah using a wheelchair. So for him, a wheelchair is a very normal thing.
Yes.
So when a little boy came into, this is when he was much younger, a little disabled boy came into the class, obviously Charlie just went to him because, you know, it's normal.
Oh.
And the mum came up to Charlie, to Charlotte, my sister, after school and said, you know, thank you so much for your son being so lovely to Charlie. They were both called Charlie. My sister said to her, you know, it's the truth is, it's probably because to him it's very normal.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it comes down to. It's where our normalness lies. And I always, you know, obviously I've got annoyed over the years with things, but I have come to realize that sometimes people will say stuff to you when the simple truth is they just don't know what to say. And I get that, and that again that's part of our spiritual journey, because having to own that, you know, I think as well people feel almost uncomfortable when you're not what they imagine a disabled person to be, like, because I'm very like, because if you're very confident and behave, I don't know what people expect, but I've had it before that people have almost been, it's not what I expect, you're totally, you know, you're
interesting.
Yeah, it is. And I think as well, this is part of our spiritual processes and journeys when we're having to move through those spaces. And I believe, like you, about not making an emphasis on things, like it is what it is. And, you know, they can be our superpowers. That's what I like to think of.
Oh, that's so true. Do you know what? That's interesting, because it's almost like for me and you, it's like, yeah, that's for you, although somebody could say from the outside, or that's, you know, a big part of your life, you're disabled, to you, it's like, well, that's just one of many parts. There are so many layers and parts. And like you say, I feel like we can use both to our advantage. I mean, through my sexuality, I find like that can be an advantage. I mean, I know that sounds weird to say, but it has been an advantage in many occasions. Obviously, like growing up, it wasn't at all, but now it kind of is. Which is, that in itself is a little bit mind-boggling, because don't you think that those situations make you believe, it's like, well, wait a minute, I thought for all these years it was a bad thing and something I didn't want, and now it's almost like I'm grateful for it and I feel like it's a good thing. It's weird. It's like everything is labelled. So on the surface, it's like, well, if you're different, that surely can't be a good thing. But then in a lot of situations, life can teach you that maybe it isn't, and maybe it's like an okay thing. It's so interesting.
Oh, it really is as well. And I think the thing is, you know, for every time I think of this with especially with sexuality, for instance, when somebody stands up, and again with, I think, with color, with ethnicity, with anything like that, and somebody stands up who is different, it gives permission. If somebody's able to own it and own it from that space, it begins to give that permission and open the doorway for other people to. And that is such an amazing thing. And it, you know, the more we can do that, the more then we can move through the generational thing of inspiring anyone who's younger to say, actually, if I'm seeing that person doing it up there on that platform, it gives that permission for that person to do it or feel safer. And I think it comes down to this. Everything, you know, what were those experiences we're having, it comes down to safety. Yeah. And we firstly become safe in our own bodies and in our own space. That's where it has to begin. Safety has to start with us. And I think whatever journey we're on, whatever's happening to us, our behaviors often only ever link to us seeking relief and looking for safety, even if it's not within habits that are the most positive or deemed the most positive. And I think, you know, as soon as we can start to become truly safe within the space we're in, we can then show other people from that space of safety and create those safe spaces for other people.
That's a really good point. I mean, for me, being spiritual helped me so much with that aspect. And that's why I think spirituality can be so powerful, because it doesn't matter who you are or what difference you have. For me, kind of seeking spirituality and everything that it brought, made me realize that my sexuality is just it's something that you actually can embrace, and it's okay to embrace differences. So it's interesting, because although you wouldn't link sexuality and spirituality together in that way, and I've not really heard many people say it like this, but I do feel like it has helped me, because it's just made me realize that it's an okay thing, and then it then makes you feel confident within yourself. And like you said, then you can own that confidence then, can't you? I mean, for me now, I don't think about it anymore. Like, years ago, it was always such a big thing. I always thought about it. It was always in my mind. But now it's like, I guess because obviously everyone around me just knows me, and it's almost like it's just not a big deal now, where when I was younger, it was such a big deal. And I'm sure for you, it's the same. It's probably for you, it's not as big a deal, is it, being disabled compared to what it used to be like? It's definitely got better for me, for sure. Definitely.
And I think as well, it's owning it. I have to learn to accept that I know people are going to stare at me sometimes. And do you know what? Fine, because the simple thing of it is, we all look at things that are different. And I hope, you know, I like to look at it like this. I hope they're looking at me because they're thinking, oh my God, look at that girl in that chair. She looks really hot.
Yes, honey. I love that.
You know, like, and I think it's that as well. Like, sometimes if you're not conforming to the idea of what people think a certain person should be in that situation, it is going to spark intrigue. It's going to spark people looking. And sometimes I've had friends who've said, oh my God, it makes me so cross that people stare at you. And I'm like, do you know what? Yes, it's weird sometimes. And sometimes people are a bit strange with it. But at the end of the day, I appreciate his curiosity. And I try and...
It's a good way of looking at it.
The other person's thing, and think, maybe what would I do if I was in that position? What would I do if I'd never experienced this? And
That's a good point.
Learn to pivot and understand that what's happened to that person's programming or what's happened to them throughout their life that's led them to that place, that maybe that's, you know, you're seeing life through, that they're seeing life through their lens. And I guess that's all we can ever do, is see through life through our own lens. And it's how we, you know, choose to shift with looking through our lens of life and open our possibility. I guess when we're spiritually awakening, the lens begins to expand.
Oh, doesn't it? Yeah, it
really does. And it's like a kaleidoscope, you know, when we're looking, and that's essentially what's happening to us. So I guess it's remembering that sometimes when people, yes, it's hard, because oh God, it's painful sometimes for the person on the receiving end if somebody is not responding to us in the best way. But I guess it's understanding that they're seeing it from their lens. And, you know, it's where we have to learn those practices of forgiveness, or, you know, acceptance, or having...
No, I agree.
Yeah, I mean, and, you know, things like forgiveness are a massive thing, right? You know, on the spiritual journey, I often think is forgiveness. We are being constantly called to forgive ourselves. And I think that's where it has begin, because we are so hard on ourselves on a daily basis. And
yeah, we are.
You know, I look, there's a Kundalini yoga, the kind of person that founded it, and he said, I read in a book somewhere, said to somebody, the difference between me and you is that I am forgiving myself every day throughout the day, and understanding that the process of forgiveness is not just a one-stop shop or just a thing you do every now and then. I think it's a continual process of you know, leaning deeper into that and understanding that when we're forgiving, it's taking our hands off the wheel, so to speak. It's releasing ourselves from often the poison we're putting on ourselves as much as to the outside world as well.
I think self-forgiveness, like you say, it needs to start there, doesn't it? Because that's the hardest. It's forgiving yourself, like when you're spiritual, for it's forgiving yourself for putting up with all of the stuff you used to put up with when you were younger. It's forgiving yourself for allowing yourself to kind of feel that low and that unworthiness. And it's forgiving yourself for all of those things. And I think that's really powerful, because when we do forgive ourselves, that's really transformational, isn't it? I mean, that is a big one. Self-forgiveness is a huge one. I mean, forgiving other people too. I mean, depending on how close you are to them, that is hard as well. But I think when it's yourself, it just feels all that more personal, doesn't it? It's like, whoa, we're not taught this. We're not taught to forgive ourselves. We're not taught to... It's interesting when you're saying about schools earlier, I really wish... Can you imagine in school if you're literally taught to love yourself? Lessons on loving yourself.
Loving ourselves, and also lessons on you know, things like forgiveness, acceptance, and teaching us to really meet ourselves where we're at. Because often, you know, what you said about, yes, it can be really hard to forgive another person. And I think as well, there's so many warped perceptions over that, because sometimes it's remembering that just when we're forgiving someone, it doesn't mean that we're condoling somebody's actions towards us, or needing to even have them back in our lives. It's creating that space for ourselves. It's releasing ourselves from the pain of that bond that kind of has been created from whatever we're having to forgive or let go of. And you know, imagine if we were actually given guidelines and taught the kind of, you know, the direction to this, and actually why this is important. Because it doesn't matter whatever workplace you're in, whatever path you're on, we need those tools.
We need it.
We need all of those tools. It doesn't matter whether you work in a shop.
Yeah.
You work in a temple. At the end of the day, you're interacting potentially with other humans and you're dealing with yourself. All of these things that can come up. We essentially all need to have a toolbox for our lives, and that toolbox needs to be personalized for ourselves. And I think that's the key thing here. It's remembering that within our own personal toolbox, it's using the things that work for us. Somebody can suggest something to you, and we often can be very hard on ourselves if that thing hasn't worked. And it's just because either maybe it's not the right time for it to work for us, or maybe it's just not the right thing for us. And sometimes having to accept that and let go of that and be like, okay, yeah, you know, this was great, but it wasn't the right thing for me. Not being hard on yourself for that as well. And, you know, having that toolbox tailored to yourself is a really key thing for us on this journey.
And I think everybody, like you said, everybody needs it, spiritual, non-spiritual, everyone. I mean, really, I think that's what in our deeper sense is interesting. If we were taught this stuff in school, like the world right now would be completely opposite. Everything would be so different, because people would like learn to love themselves, and then there'd be like forgiveness and compassion, and life would just be like one amazing place to be. And I sometimes like think that it'd be really crazy, wouldn't it, to have everybody kind of awakened and on this path. It would be like mind-blowing. I mean, we can only dream of that, but it would be life-changing for sure. It would be amazing.
Definitely. And I think it boils down to awareness as well, that I guess even the people around us, we all reflect and respond to one another, don't we? It's the more we can make sure that we are from within ourselves, what we're giving out to the world, and starting from that place and trusting ourselves as well. We're not taught to trust ourselves. We're not taught to listen to ourselves. We're taught all from the outside. And the one thing I feel is so important, I try to talk, you know, whether it's in talks or how I'm delivering a message, is come back to yourself, like learning to strengthen your intuition. Your intuition is one of the most powerful gifts and things that you have. And look, sometimes we'll make what is considered to be the wrong decision, but it's how we view that, because sometimes we need to make those wrong decisions in order to get to the place where we need to be. Sometimes
that's so true.
It's the reroute and it's the redirection. And I know it's frustrating. We've all been there when
yeah.
we decided to do something and it's not gone well, or we've decided to, you know, do a course or do something, not turned out how we've wanted it. It can be so deeply uncomfortable, but our perception and how we choose to view that will have an impact and on everything. And then how we choose to redirect ourselves from that and, you know, learn to trust ourselves from that and the feedback we got from it, it really does change everything.
I think perception as well. Perception is everything. The way it is, isn't it? I mean, perception is everything. When things don't go well, and like you say, we do something that doesn't work, it can be so frustrating. And that's when, in that moment, that's when we really are being called then to remember what we know. We're being called to remember and to trust in what we know. And that is when it's at its hardest, because it can be really easy, and we've all done that, to throw our toys out of the pram, to get upset and angry, and just to kind of like disregard all of the tools that we use and all the information that we know, because it's not working out in the way we wanted it to. And because of that, we're acting out and we are throwing our toys literally out of the pram. And I mean, that is interesting, because that's when you realize actually just how useful your spirituality and your tools and your perception is. It's so important, because you can easily then redirect it. And it's funny, because I always say that when things happen, for me especially, it can be months and months before I find out why. It's like, that's why it happened. That's why it worked out like that. So in the moment, although I don't know why this is happening, why isn't it worked out, what's going on, months down the line, weeks down the line, I have that, you know, just that realization of, okay, so that didn't work out because then this happened and that happened. It's like a chain reaction. And 9 times out of 10, it's always like positive. It's like, okay, that happened, so this good thing could happen. So to anyone listening, if you're going through like a really hard time, just trust it, because obviously me and Hannah have both been through really hard times and, you know, really down moments that felt like really things would never ever kind of get better. So trust me, they do. And maybe you're just going on the long way round, because we've all been that way as well, and it is hard, but I do believe that it's all happening for a bigger and better purpose. And I mean, and that's only because I choose to believe it like that. And when you choose to believe it like that, you are normally proven right. I believe that. It's like the universe has a really weird way sometimes of showing us what's true and what's not.
Oh, it really does. I mean, I like to believe the universe really does have our back, even if it doesn't feel like it.
Yeah.
Moment. And what you said about throwing our toys out the pram, sometimes we need to have those moments where we actually do action through that, throw the toys out the pram. When we experience and actually be, okay, I'm going to do that, I'm going to become present, we can move through that experience much quicker than being hard on ourselves. So if you are, as Jack said, you know, if you're listening and it is a bit rubbish right now, or maybe you're having that moment where you are throwing your toys out the pram, become present with that, forgive yourself, you know that, you know, you're getting that feedback that the toys are out the pram now. Pick them up. but also knowing that we've been brought, you've been brought to that space, you've been brought to your knees for that reason. And, you know, it's the getting back up. And, you know, I was telling my friend the other day about this story many years ago. I was an ice skater. And, so this is like years as a child. So when I was, I think I was about 8 or 9, Torval and Dean, who obviously do dance.
Yeah.
So they were my idols.
I love that.
I had t-shirts and everything. And so they were doing a tour of the country, and I obviously was going to go to the show, but they decided to do a competition. Every area they went to, they had a rink to get people to come and skate on their show. And because obviously I was, you know, a fairly proficient skater, I was quite, you know, I didn't necessarily think I was going to win, but I was just really excited to be able to take part. So obviously there was tons of people turned up that day. You know, people that could barely skate, I guess, just to be like, oh my God, you know, it's Torval and Dean. And yeah, and so I go on the ice and I was doing a very simple, you know, I was really pleased with myself. It's going to do a very simple maneuver and I fell down. I mean, and I didn't just fall, I flew across the ice. Now, I happened to fall in front of my dad, like, you know, talk about divine timing, who I guess at the time must have been like, oh my God, like, what's happened? So I saw him just go and get up. So I thought, you know, I've got two choices in life here. I can either feel bad about this, which I mean, my pride more than anything, I knew I
was. Oh, yeah, yeah.
I got up and I carried on. And that I think is the best metaphor. I got back up, and when I got to the end, obviously Torvald and Dean said to me, "Oh my gosh, are you okay?" Like, and I was just mortified. I was like, I am. I was very grateful I was okay, but more than anything, I was like, I fell over in front of Torvald and Dean. And the worst thing is the local TV were there and they picked me up, and I was on the news. God. Thankfully, YouTube didn't exist then, so there's no evidence.
Oh, but I bet you were equally starstruck though, because it's like I'm talking to Tubman, didn't it? It's like, oh my God.
Yeah, exactly. And I think it's that thing of like, and I've always come back to that moment of I got up and I, you know, because obviously yeah. I was safe to, and you know, there could have been two options there. I either crumpled and I didn't get back up. And my dad said to me, "I didn't expect you to get up."
Wow.
But I just remember thinking at the time, like, I can't believe this is happening. But you know, it is that thing about if you are down, you know, you can get back up. And yes, it may be, you know, ego bruising or yeah. for your pride at the time, but you do come out the other end of it. And you know, I live to tell the tale. And you know, I met Torvald and Dean. They talked to me. They put their arms around me.
I mean, what else do we need in life? Like, hello.
I know, exactly.
And I think that's a really, really great just method for life, isn't it? That just we can get back up and we can carry on and it's okay. We don't need to, like, you know, we don't need to give up. We can just carry on and we can pick ourselves up, brush ourselves off, take a deep breath and just carry on and just keep going yeah. for it. Wow. Okay. I've got one last thing I really want to ask you. Aww. And I think this will be a really nice roundup. So if you could say anything at all, what would you say your disability has taught you? I'm really interested to know what has being disabled taught you? Because I feel like the answer might be quite, for a lot of people listening, unexpected.
I think what it's taught me is to become okay with being different and to become okay with the discomfort, and also the fact that just because this is happening to you, you can still make the best of it. And I want to say to anybody listening who maybe is experiencing that, you can still find a way to shine even despite that happening. And you know, it's how we look at it. You know, it might not be the most ideal thing and you may feel like you're coming against barriers, but that there is another way. And you know, I want everyone to know that wherever you're at in life, we can always find a way. And I think that's what this has taught me. There is another way. We can find a way to shine and we can find a way to find grace no matter what's happening. And yeah, that would be what I would say.
Oh, and I love the fact you just added, we can find grace. I mean, I feel like that tagline and mantra is going to really serve you very well in life. And I guess, Hannah, it already has. I mean, you're proving it, aren't you? That kind of mantra, because it is, it's already served you so well, hasn't it? And I'm guessing it will really, really continue to do so. It's really inspiring, isn't it? I love it. Oh,
thank you so much, Jane. Thanks for having me on. It's been such a beautiful conversation, a really co-creative, beautiful conversation.
Yeah, it's been interesting, hasn't it? I mean, this one, I had like points before, but this has taken a totally different edge, and I love that because it's had twists and turns and we've covered a lot. It's
so much.
I mean, I think we need to do another one next time because I feel like that's just us scratching the surface. There's even we could get a lot deeper, couldn't we, really? Let's be honest.
Go down the spiritual rabbit hole.
Hannah, we literally fell down it and it's like, whoa, this is a lot, but God, we could talk about it all day, couldn't we?
Thank you so much.
Hi everyone, I just want to say a huge, huge thank you for listening to the final episode, the final one for season 2 of A Slice to Life with me, Jack Walton. It's been, wow, it's been a crazy season. Started this season in December, which came out in January for you guys, recording with guests in the studio, and then halfway through, obviously, due to lockdown, we're all now working and doing it from home. So yeah, thank you so much for putting up with me and, you know, the different technical things we've been dealing with. It's been a huge ride. Actually, I've really enjoyed it because it's really shown me that This podcast is a huge passion for me, and I always, always continue doing it no matter what happens. So yes, thank you all, amazing. Thank you so much to this month's guest, Hannah Wallace, and a huge thank you as always to our amazing producer, Hassan Ul Haq. Hassan is absolutely amazing, so big shout out to him. And yeah, guys, I will hopefully see you for season 3. I say this all the time, we'll see what happens, but you absolutely know I'll be back. Guys, sending you all the love. See you soon. Bye, everyone.